Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by my regulars, my co-host, Cody Thompson. What's your word today, Cody? How are you doing?
Pretty jazzed. I mean, we're doing a morning podcast, so I feel like this is great.
Pretty jazzed. Wow, that's a great one. Tracy, how are you this morning?
I'm fantastic. I love morning podcasts.
Fantastic. How about you, Matt? Do you love morning podcasts?
Thumbs down.
I think he's going to be giving me a thumbs down on that. Thumbs middle. Okay. I'm doing all right as well. This is fun. I like it in the morning. But what are we going to talk about today, Cody?
The title is Honey, I Shrunk the Team.
That's right. Honey, I Shrunk the Team. We're going to talk about something that we've probably alluded to before. I talk about it a lot in my speeches and when I do Q&A with audiences, and that is, how big should your team be, the leadership team of an organization? And how do you go about getting that right size? And I think this is one of the most difficult, challenging things that leaders of organizations have to deal with, whether it's a school, a church, a corporation, or a department within a company, how to make the team the right size. And almost always, it errs on the side of being too large. Most teams that we work with have just too many people sitting around the table. And people say, why? Why does it matter? And that's what we're going to talk about today, why it's important to have the right size team and how to go about doing one of the most painful things for leaders, and that's shrinking the size of your team. So yeah. That's our topic today. What do you think, Cody?
I like it. I think that probably every consultative conversation we've had with any organization that reaches out to us, Pat, the first thing we ask is like, tell us about your team. Almost always in that first 30 minutes of that conversation, we talk about the size of their team, because very regularly they'll say, oh, we have 12 people, and we'll ask who are the people that need to be in the room, the decision makers. And it's not that we are on a mission every time to shrink a team, but very regularly we're running into teams that are just too large, and they're calling themselves a team for all the wrong reasons, and they're not able to do the behaviors of a team.
Right. And when they tell us that and we say, yeah, that's too big, you think we've just told them that they have to burn down their house and sprint around the block naked.
Right.
I mean, or I don't know, something horrible. But because I honestly think some CEOs would rather fire somebody on their team than take them off their leadership team. It's almost that painful. They're like, oh, well, I'm not going to be able to. You have 14 people on your team. You're going to have to get some people off. Oh, no, that's going to be too hard. And so they leave the team too large, and it really impacts the success of the organization.
Hey, can I just clarify something before you guys go on? Yeah. Are you talking about just the leadership team of an organization, or is this beyond? Does this go lower into the organization as well?
Well, I think it does go lower, Trace. I think, though, it's especially problematic at the top.
Okay.
And granted, we've done a lot of work with people that run an organization that we consult to. Sometimes it might be a division within a company or a department. But I think any team cannot be too large. And so let's actually answer the question, Cody. How many people should be on a team? My sense, it's somewhere between 3 and 8. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the answer. I probably would have said 3 and 9 is pushing it, but definitely whenever we get into there's a dozen people on our team, some of the things that we're going to talk about, the behaviors that can't play out in meetings and the way that they can't interact, that starts to get harder and harder every person you add after 8 or 9, I feel like.
Right. Now, so why, the big question here is why? Why should it be that size? And it's not because we have a magic number or because that's how many will fit in a conference room. The real reason comes from a guy named Chris Argyris, who was a professor at Harvard. And he came up with this idea. He said, there's different kinds of communication that have to happen on a team and in a meeting. And two of them, the two of the most important are advocacy and inquiry. Advocacy is when people actually advocate something. They say, I think we should do this. Inquiry is when somebody says, why do you think that? Or how did you come up with that? Or I don't think I understand you, or tell me more. And when you get too many people on a team, people stop inquiring. Inquiry goes down. Advocacy goes up because people realize this room is so big, I'm never going to get the floor back. So when I get a chance to talk, I'm going to advocate for what I want. I'm not going to waste my valuable floor time asking somebody else to go into further detail. We see this happen on big committees. We see it happen in government and on when you go to a school and they have like 30 people on the parent teacher association or something, and people just sit around the room. You know, you go to the United Nations and one person after another stands up and says, this is what we think. And nobody goes, let's go back to Lithuania and ask them some more questions. Mm-hmm. So when your team is too big, advocacy goes up, inquiry goes down, people understand each other less, and the quality of the decision-making and the dialogue is demonstrably lower.
I feel like as people listen to that, that could sound theoretical, and it's as practical as anything that we do with teams, because it's totally human nature to walk in there in a large group and say, oh, I'm only going to get a little bit of time to talk. I need to represent my department, or I need to represent our interests in marketing or whatever it is. And they don't do the very thing. Like a consultant of ours uses a phrase that's curiosity is vulnerability. And in some ways, like when you're curious, when you're inquiring and asking questions as if you don't know the answer, it can help build vulnerability. Cause I'm saying like, hey, what's going on in your department? How can we help you? And so it's not a theory. It is as immensely practical on teams. If teams are too large, you just lose that ability to like settle into the inquiry part of it. It undermines vulnerability. It undermines all of the things that we think build teams.
And I think most people listening to this have been on those kind of teams or committees, and they realize it's so hard to get anything done. It's so hard to make good decisions. And yet, even though we've all experienced that, ooh, when it's our own team, we hesitate to make it smaller.
I think it's worth pausing and defining what you mean by team, because I think this is an important piece of this conversation. A team versus a working group.
Yeah. Yeah. Teamwork, like we like to say, it's a choice. People need to opt into the reality of what a team is. It's not just it's not like a default virtue. Like, well, there's a bunch of us working together. Let's call each other a team. That'll do it. And people do this all the time. Teamwork requires, you know, that people make trade-offs and sacrifice their own good for the good of the whole, and that they have some interdependency, and that there is one score at the end. A golf team, that would be a basketball team, or most teams we think about. A golf team, they can go off. They could never see each other. They go off and play their round, add up their scores. One could leave and never not even see one of his or her teammates. And you could say, well, that's our golf team. But golf teamwork is not the kind of teamwork we're talking about. I know golf purists are going to go, what about the Ryder Cup? And it's like, generally speaking, though, golf teams are not teams. They're working groups, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But when we talk about a team, we're talking about people that have one overriding objective, interdependency, sacrifice for one another. And okay, I think what we should do now is say, so why do people make their teams too big? Why is it not half the teams are too small, half are too big? And that's because we think about these words like inclusion, like we should be more inclusive. So let's have somebody from every department in the organization at the table so we can include them and make them feel included. Okay. Or oftentimes leaders think, oh, that I can't pay that guy or that gal more. I'm going to put them on my leadership team and that'll make them feel important. It's like a reward. It's like part of compensation. It's a perk, you know, or it's a symbol of their importance. And these are all very bad reasons to put someone on your leadership team. And after a while, when we do that, we get a non-functioning leadership team. And then we're going to have to rescind something that we gave for the wrong reason. And that is what's so painful for so many leaders.
Yeah. I even think, you know, when you were describing the team, it's that success and failure is dependent on how well we interact with one another, how well we make decisions. And I was just thinking of the five dysfunctions pyramid, Pat, that it's not just inquiry and advocacy that gets harder when the team grows. Like you could literally walk yourself up the pyramid. Trust gets harder when teams are bigger.
Yeah, that's conflict, a great point.
What happens in a room, when you're in a big room and you start to have conflict, you think like, oh, well, they're going to fight it out, or I don't get to be heard, or it's hard to everybody to weigh in. So then they leave the room and it's harder to get commitment because some people felt like they didn't have time to weigh in. It's harder to hold each other accountable. And so every step of that pyramid all the way up to results gets more difficult if you have teams that are too big. You just can't functionally go through those five behaviors that make an effective, cohesive team and do it in a reasonable way with the time that you're given if the team is too large.
Right. And it does start with trust because you can't build intimacy with too many people.
Right.
You know, I mean, we've had teams with 18 people sitting around. They barely know each other. You know, you do the personal histories exercise and they have to introduce each other. Like, yeah. Who are you? I've never really talked to you. You know, I have a great story about a company we worked with years ago, a technology company, and they merged with a similar sized company. And of course, after a merger, they're like, we don't want them to feel bad. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to put all of their leaders on the leadership team along with ours. They literally, I called it Noah's Ark leadership team. They had two heads of marketing, two heads of sales. And it was so crazy. And nobody thought it was going to work. But the leader, a very professional person, she was a really bright person, but she was just like, oh, I really don't want to have to tell somebody they're not going to be on the team. They would have 18 people in a room. And it was so non-functioning. I mean, the meetings were slow and boring. Literally, people would fall asleep in the meeting. And they'd go around and talk, and they would look at the guy next to him, and he'd be asleep because it was that bad. People started begging. They were lobbying to get taken off the team. Could I please not be on this team anymore? Because it was, nothing was getting done. And they would rather work at a functional company where they weren't on the leadership team than be on the leadership team and watch the sausage making when it was so ugly.
I think this is important to mention here, because when we walk into those rooms, Pat, and there's that many people, we're relatively agnostic. We're not trying to make every group a team. That's not what we do. Just because we have a book on teamwork, we're not saying like, you guys need to be a team. We're actually trying to help them identify, hey, are you a working group? And if there's 18 of you, don't say that you're a team, because you're going to feel all this guilt that you're not performing like a team if you're really a working group. So it's really not us trying to like, oh, hey, teamwork is the best way to go about. Now, there are parts of, there are industries and endeavors that people are in where teamwork will right. be the advantage for them. But it's not like we go into every one of those rooms and say, oh, you need to become a team. We're just trying to figure out like, are you a team? And if you are, here's the behaviors you need to exhibit. If you're not a team, it's actually better for you to say that you're a working group and that we're going to go out and shoot our own scores like a golf team and then add them up at the end and see how we do.
Right. Now, most of them have read the book, so they call us saying, right. yeah, we heard that. We really want to be a team. So we walk in the room and we go, hey, let's think about this one more time. You don't have to be a team. Yeah, we give them permission to opt out, but rarely do they. They're like, no, we like that team thing. Though in the book, you guys made it very clear that that's the right thing to do. We're like, okay, so let's talk about making this a real team, and it's got to be smaller. Now, so the question is, how do you do that? And the most important thing I say to people is, you're not going to do it one at a time. We're not going to like pull this Band-Aid off one hair at a time and be super painful. We're also not going to, you know, vote someone off the island. Like, okay, let's draw this out and have each person. What I say to them is, when their team is too large, rather than go through the process of subtraction, what I say is, just tell me, if you had to have 4 or 5 people in a room to make decisions. So we're going from 9 to 4 or 5. So it's not going to be like individuals are going to think they're going to get singled out. We do it by playing offense and say, who are the 4 or 5 people that have to be in the room? Now, I will tell you, Cody and Tracy and Matt, that we worked with a team that had 13 people on their executive team recently. And it was a great organization, one of my favorites that I've ever worked with, doing really, really important work. And we knew they needed to get it smaller. And they were humble enough, and the mission was important enough, that people were pretty open to the concept, but the idea of how they were going to do that seemed so painful. And so I just said, I really wanted to get there. And I said, hey, everybody, write down the 4 or 5 people that you think need to be in the meetings every week with the CEO. And you can put yourself on there, or you don't have to. And it was, at first, people were like, what? And 15 minutes later, we had the same 6 names. Everybody had written the same 6 names, more or less. And then one of the 6 said, I don't think I need to be there. And they go, yeah, you're probably right. It's these 5. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, this is going to be awesome. Now, one of the things I will say to people listening is, I said, I don't think this group of 13 or 14 needs to stop meeting. But they need, you can do it less frequently. And the purpose isn't to make day-to-day decisions for the company. It's to weigh in, to listen to what's going on, to make sure you're on the same page, but you are going to give responsibility to that smaller team so they can make faster decisions, more informed, and you're not going to be completely out of the loop, but you are actually going to humbly give them the permission to run this organization. And it works. Yeah. But it requires that the CEO or the leader of the team is willing to let people be a little disappointed for a while.
Well, I think the question that you asked is the right one, because the who should be in the room to make these day-to-day decisions about running this team or this department or this the organization. Because I think some of the tendency that makes these teams grow too large is they do it by title. Like, oh, we need finance and we need marketing and we need, all. So they do it by the seat rather than the person. And so asking the question of like, who are the four or five people that you need in here who are going to help steer the direction of the team? That I like stripping away the title. Now, certainly there's the information that those people have that bring into the decision-making process. There's probably a mixture of those things.
Yeah, but it's an art, not a science. It's an art, not a science. Right. But there are certain people, like the COO on a team is probably going to be in that room.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if they say, well, I don't think he is the right guy or she's the right gal to be here, it's kind of like, should they be the COO then? Because they're like the second most influential person. So sometimes the job title is a pretty good indication that they're going to need to be there, but it's not a science. It's not like these four functions have to be on the team.
Yeah. And I do think that like that example that you used, teams do grow because you say most leaders think of it as a little bit of a reward, where when you actually get down to it and say, hey, you don't have to meet as much, there's these five people. But the majority of the people in that room probably felt relieved that they were like, boy, that'd be great for you guys to meet and cascade some of the decisions you're making. I can still do my thing. More often than not, when it's that clear, when 13 people agree on which six people should be in the room, it's because they're in the room feeling like, well, I shouldn't be here. I don't add a lot of value. I don't necessarily participate in the decision making. So it actually is, like you said, the leader thinks it's a reward. It's actually a reward to say, hey, it's a responsibility to be on that team. I'm going to relieve you of that responsibility and let you do the thing that you need to do.
That's a great point, Cody. I always say this should be a burden. Leadership is not a reward. It's a burden. And I want the people on this team are the ones that can accept that. And you kind of have to demystify this concept that it's like the golden child because you're on the team. It's not. It's a responsibility that requires. And when you tell them, you're going to be spending a lot more time in meetings than the others, that sometimes helps people opt out as well.
Yeah.
one of the things I was thinking about this too is that sometimes when I'm talking to the leader of a team, I'll say, who's your kitchen cabinet? And they're like, what do you mean? Well, who are the people that you find yourself like huddling with almost all the time anyway? Or you at night, you'll do a quick conference call because you really need to get their input. And they'll go, and everybody on the team will go, oh yeah, you do that with Fred and Sally and Janet. And I'm like, maybe that's your team. And sometimes they're like, oh yeah, we already have a team. Yeah. We just don't, it seemed so informal. And so they go, okay, let's actually formalize that as the leadership team and make the other one kind of the extended leadership team and change the way we look at how we go about making decisions.
So let me ask you this, Pat. I think we're wrapping up soon, but let's say I'm a leader listening to this and maybe I'm not the CEO, maybe I'm a mid-level leader or department leader. And I'm like, oh, maybe my team is too big. What should I do after listening to this?
I think the first thing you need to do is you should go to the whole team and say, listen, you guys, we owe it to the organization to make this team super functional. And I've probably added too many people to the team because I like you all and I think you're all really important. And in a perfect world, I would love to get your input on every decision, but it doesn't work. And I think it doesn't work for you. It doesn't work for the company. And so we need to do this, but I don't want you to think that somehow I'm going to make you a less important contributor. And I lay it all out for them and be vulnerable about the fact that it's really hard for me to think about doing this, because if any of you took this as anything but doing something for the good of the company and that it was some reflection on you, then that would be really a bummer for me, but I need to do this. So I think be vulnerable. Don't just try to be like, well, I'll just do it and hopefully they won't be upset. I think putting that out there on the table and then saying, and if it's hard for you, let me know why, or if you really feel like you should be on the team, I'm open to hearing that. Now, but what I find is that it's actually the leader who has a much harder time than the other people. And what I tell the leader is this: if you have a person on your team that you're pretty sure shouldn't be on the team, and when you suggest that and they're constantly arguing to be on there and they're not doing something that's mission critical, and that's a sign maybe that they're not the ideal team player. There might be a humility issue there. You know, so the process of doing this should show a leader who is really more interested in results as opposed to status. So that's one thing. You know, I think about this even, I like to use examples outside of the world of CEOs. I mean, if you were the principal of a school, and a lot of principals have this thing like, I'm the principal, and then I have a bunch of teachers and specialists and all this, and I manage all of them. So they don't really even have a team, or they have all staff meetings. I will just say, so maybe it's a vice principal, probably that, but maybe there's a teacher and they teach sixth grade, but they're really good at looking across all the different classes and at curriculums. And maybe you have somebody over here who's like an administrative assistant, but man, they understand the operations of the school. Think outside the box and think about it's on a football team in the NFL. Sometimes there's like 30 coaches on an NFL team. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. And so a coach will go, well, I want you to work with my coaches, and they'll bring in 30 people. And I say, well, why don't you figure out who the top five or six are? And then they'll go, well, the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator. And sometimes it's often like the guy in charge of health and fitness or working out, you know, what's the right word? That sounds like I've never seen a football game before. Strength and conditioning. That's what they call it. It's usually he is the one that they want on that team, because they know the players better than anybody. So it'll be offensive and defensive, and somebody go, well, what about that guy over there? He's doing special teams. It's like, nah, I don't think he really needs to be in all these meetings.
Yeah.
And so it's not, like we said before, it's not a science, it's an art. And you think about their role, but you think about the person, you think about what they bring to that team. Oh, let me tell you, when we convince a leader to make their team smaller, they're always so glad.
Yeah.
Their meetings go from drudgery and frustration to productivity and relief.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the message we want to send to people out there. Hey, and if you're on a dysfunctional team and there's 12 of you and you'd prefer not to be on there, don't think you're committing a career limiting move by saying, hey, I think it's okay if I'm not on these. If you want to take me off, that will probably earn you more respect and admiration from the leader than something else. Karen just wrote me a note. She's great about that. And it said that, what about working genius? And I think it's worth considering a person's working genius. Sometimes you say, I need this person on the team because nobody else has D or nobody else has T, and they really keep us balanced. And the four or five of us that sit on this team need that person.
Yeah, I almost brought that up too. I think the idea that—
Are you saying that wasn't right? It was your idea, not Karen's?
Yeah, it was me who passed that note to you through the computer. No, it was, but I do think that there, as if a leader is sitting there thinking who should be in that room or on that team, no, being self-aware first about your working genius or other personality instruments, sort of, that would be helpful to go, oh, well, I'm a inventor galvanizer. It'd be great if I had this person because of what they bring to the table, not necessarily their title. So I do think working genius would play a role in deciding that.
Because sometimes leaders pick people that think like them or act like them or have the same profile as them. And what they want is people to have much different ones. There's another thing I think we want to say here that we haven't said yet, and that is, as an organization gets bigger, sometimes the leadership team, often it needs to be smaller. So sometimes we think, well, now we have 100 employees, we should add more people to the leadership team. Actually, and now we're 1,000 employees and we have 3 different lines of business. It's so much harder to run a complex organization with a lot of people. So it's the irony is that the larger the organization probably requires a slightly smaller team.
I love that. I actually got an email from a person who does our stuff out in the world, and they read that I think it was in the Advantage and the 5 Dysfunctions, you wrote that sentiment that the larger the organization gets, the leadership team should be smaller. And he, in his email, he's like, did Pat mean to write that? Because I think the general sentiment would be like, no, actually there's more people. We need more people in that room. And then you and I were at a really large company not that long ago where they had almost 18 people in that room. And it was just a further confirmation that you need, as the organization grows, you need a kitchen cabinet, a smaller group of leaders that is making decisions. Because it was just too arduous, too long to even get to the daily sort of tactical decisions.
Yeah. And once again, in that situation, the people in the room who would have been coming off the team when we raised that seemed a lot more open to that than the leader was of taking them off.
Yep.
So, all righty. I think that's it today. We don't want to make these any longer than they need to be. This one was pretty long. All right. Well, thanks
for everything. We made no mention of the title being Honey, I Shrunk the Team. you know, about the comedy in the 90s. Was it the 90s or early 2000s?
I'm pretty sure it was the 80s. Wasn't it the 80s?
I think it was the 80s. I mean, Tracy and I, you don't remember that, Cody, because you were not born, I don't think.
I saw it in the 90s for sure.
But the funny thing was, we were talking about that movie, and Matt, our engineer, who's 24 and a sensitive chap, he said, oh, that movie scared the heck out of me. I had nightmares. So that was a horror movie for him as a five-year-old when he saw it.
Yeah, different genre. So,
one man's garbage is another man's trash. One man's comedy is another man's horror. And we'll end it at that. That's our little takeaway. So thanks for joining us, everybody, on the podcast. We really appreciate you. And we'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.